Hey John, do you notice anything different about me?
You sound a lot better, man.
I sound a lot better. That's because I ordered a new microphone for our podcast. I'm going to show it to you right here. I got it on Amazon. It is the Samson Go Mic, and it is a USB portable microphone. I think it regularly retails for about $90, but I got it for, I believe, $30 on Amazon right now. And I've got to tell you something. It has a few different features. It can record vocals coming at it from one direction, or it can record all around it. And I was playing with it earlier today upstairs in my house by a window that has a tree outside of it. And all of a sudden, I started hearing a bird chirping outside. And I took off my headphones, and I listened for the bird, and I couldn't hear it. But I put them back in, and I could hear it. And so it's a very receptive, ultra-technological spy mechanism, I think.
Well, that's pretty cool, man. I tell you what, if it will make me look any more attractive, I may get one because the sound quality sounds great.
Yeah, it's great. And for those of you that are listening, welcome to EdTrends Podcast, Episode 3, funnest time of my Wednesday night, funnest time of my week. I am here with the one and only John Hardison.
Well, very cool, man. Glad to be here again. Let's get rocking and rolling, man.
Yeah, and something that we forget to do, John, is shout out our Twitter handles. So I am Dave Guymon, and on Twitter, I am at Dave Guymon. That's G-U-Y-M-O-N.
And I am John Hardison, and Twitter at John Hardison 1, the number 1.
And it's John with an H, right?
Yes, sir. John with an H. Thank you.
J-O-H-N. Yes. John, I have our first joke for EdTrends.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I was meaning to put it out earlier, so it's not so natural now. But I was going to say that our sound on my part was so poor in the first two episodes that not even the NSA would listen to us.
Hey, that's good.
Awesome.
I love your drum roll.
Yeah, use the wrong sound effect, too. I should have used this one. But, you know, it's our third episode, so we'll get things figured out. John, it's nice to talk to you. I am leaving Idaho Falls the day after tomorrow to head down to Salt Lake and then catch an early morning flight Saturday to San Antonio for ISTE.
So what time will you be in San Antonio?
5 p.m. San Antonio time. Is that central?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. I'm Mountain Standard Time, so I guess my geographical literacy wouldn't allow me to know if that was Mountain or Central Time. But yeah, I'll be in there 5 p.m. after taking, I think, a three-hour layover in Los Angeles, which is a place I've never been, so I'm excited to look at it through the airport windows.
Very cool, man. I'll be there a couple of hours before you, man, and we'll have to do a little meet-up for dinner, man.
Yeah, I actually, you can look for me wearing this exact same shirt. I'm going to wear this outfit my first day in San Antonio. It's brown cargo shorts and a charcoal gray V-neck shirt. I just decided today it would be really great hot and humid weather attire.
Yeah. Hey, if you see somebody who looks like he's about to go play pickup basketball and is has no hair, that's me, okay? I like to dress comfortably.
All right, yeah. You were Tim Duncan. So, John, we start out the podcast each week with something that is a hot topic for ourselves, something that we're trending on. It is Ed Trends, and so we talk about trends in education. Would you like to go first?
You go first, man.
Okay, me first. Well, my wife has laughed at me a bit for this because what's trending for me right now is Minecraft. And not just Minecraft for me to play and waste time, but Minecraft in education. And my wife was teasing me about this because her brothers, who are high school age, have been playing Minecraft quite a bit, and I would make fun of them all the time for playing this pixelated two-dimensional video game online when we have the technology to be playing these 3D interactive motion censored video games, and I really didn't understand what it was all about. So I've been doing a little bit of research actually on how to play Minecraft, but then also how to use it in the classroom. Have you ever played?
No, but I tell you what, my 14-year-old son is big time into it, and so he'll call me over about once a week and show me what kind of building he has built. I'm talking it's an elaborate building that he will construct.
Does he play on the computer? Does he play on a smart device?
No, he's on the computer. Yeah.
He's on the computer. Yeah. So I saw that. What's that?
It's amazing what he comes up with. I'm like, you did that? And so, yeah, Minecraft's all the buzz.
So chime in on this, because I've only been familiar, well, I've been familiar with Minecraft, the game, for a while, about a year, I guess, but familiar with what it actually is and how people are playing it just for a few days. And my understanding from the tutorials and the blog posts that I've read is that Minecraft is a never-ending game that is all about surviving and thriving, at least in one mode, survival mode, where you basically start out with nothing and you have to mine and you have to mine for minerals, mine for natural resources that you can use to then create materials, whether it is pickaxes, swords, stoves, the materials you need to build a house, and it's basically a never-ending simulation of a growing community or a growing society. Add to that what your son has done. You talked about him building elaborate structures.
Well, Dave, I can't top how you explained it. That was near perfect, but all I can attest to is when he creates these really creative buildings, these constructions, I'll go over there and take a look at that, and he'll guide me through it. He'll take me in the various rooms and tell me how he created that and why he created it. And what I always think about, of course, since I'm a language arts teacher, is I think about, okay, how could I use this in the setting? How could I use this for the characterization of a novel we're reading? Or, you know, how could I take what my son is doing via Minecraft as he's walking me through this? And what if I took that away real quickly, that visual, and I said, now, write about it. Then there's the challenge. So that's what I'm thinking of, and I wish I were more mathematically minded, because I think there's so much there to teach the kids as far as mathematics go.
That's awesome. I've got to interrupt you, John, because I just noticed at the top of my screen that we have one viewer. I think it's our first live viewer. So let me do this for them. And awesome. Whoever you are, tweet me at Dave Guymon, and I will either bring a copy of my book, If You Can't Fail, It Doesn't Count, down to ISTE if you'll be there, or I'll send it to you just as a thanks for being our very first viewer.
Hey, and let me chime in right there. If you will tweet me at JohnHardison1, then I'll do my best to bring a Studio 113 t-shirt if I have some left. So happy to have you. First fan. Wow.
You better be. You better bring me mine at ISTE, John.
I'm working on it, man. Somebody fell through, but I'm working on it.
So getting back to Minecraft, I just want to talk about it for a little longer before I pass the mic to you for your trending topic. What is interesting to me, which I didn't understand before I started playing, is that you're dropped in this virtual world. Environment, your surroundings are created for you. Obviously, there are no structures, but there are mountains, hills, lakes, oceans, rivers, all sorts of stuff that would appear naturally, but also there are there's time. So there's daytime, there's evening, there's nighttime. And in survival mode, which is one of the two modes that I am familiar with, at nighttime bad things come out, like zombies and spiders and something called a creeper. And you have to protect yourself from them. So I'm on my second day of Minecraft on the game that I'm playing, and then the first night I got attacked by a zombie, and I had nothing to defend myself against. So I'm at the point now where I have to figure out where I'm going to create my dwelling, and I'm going to have to create a bed, I'm going to have to create light, and I'm going to have to create some sort of surrounding so that zombies and spiders and creepers can't get me at night. It's pretty interesting stuff. And going to your language arts tie-in, I was thinking, can you think of what book I was thinking would be a good one for tying to Minecraft?
And you kind of broke up just a little bit there. Can you repeat that last part?
Yeah, I'm thinking of a book, a very famous book in American literature that I think would have a great tie-in with Minecraft. Can you read my mind there?
Well, you put me on the spot there. I'm thinking right now.
The book's about reconstructing reconstructing society, if you will. Maybe not society, but surviving when you don't have the resources.
Who's your author?
I don't know.
I'm drawing a blank right now. I was wondering if it's a British author or American author or what.
I think it's American. It's Lord of the Flies.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I've never taught that one. I haven't done World Lit in probably 7 years, so that's why I'm drawing a blank, but perfect.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great tie-in. So, John, what are you trending on this week?
All right, I am trending on realtimeboard.com.
Real-time?
Realtimeboard.com. It's an online collaborative board, and I actually did my next blog post on that. I think it's coming out in a couple of days on gettingsmart.com, but I was going in there looking at it because I thought, you know, this is the time where I want to investigate some new technology out there, and I have found that it's going to be a pretty cool thing. And like I said, it's an online collaborative board, but the cool thing I liked about it is it's free for educators. Now, I don't know about you all, but I'm not getting rich monetarily as far as teaching. I'm getting rich in the heart, so I do look for free apps. And all you got to do with realtimeboard.com is just submit some information to verify you're a teacher. And within 1 day, I got the pro account for free. Ooh. And I was just going to quickly toggle over here and look at what the pro account is. The pro account is going to be unlimited private and public boards, as many as you want. Unlimited files on each board. I'm talking uploaded files, whether it's a PDF or maybe you're embedding a video, whatever. Unlimited collaborators, 3 gigabytes of storage space, and daily backups of your data to prevent permanent data loss, and then email support 24/7. Real quickly, wanted to say that one of the best things that I also like about it is you have a multitude of templates. So according to whatever your purpose is and why you are collaborating with somebody else, they already have some templates that you can go into and select, and then you can kind of go from there. And I don't know about you, man, but whenever I put some brilliant students together and they start coming up with their own creative vision, you've got that creative chaos. You've got that unorganization, if you will. And so this kind of helps them corral all that creativity. And it's kind of like my friend and I talk about, the butterflies are just flying all around your head and you can't grasp any of them. So with this realtimeboard.com, I think it can help students get a handle on what it is they're trying to accomplish. And the cool thing is, how about professional learning? How about curating resources, doing research? Or what about this? Your principal says, hey, I've started this real-time board, and I would like for us to discuss role of technology and education like we're doing tonight. And maybe he says, you know, you got 1 week right here, but at your own convenience, you go log in and you post a comment, you post a resource, you embed a video, and let's come together and extend professional learning outside of our classrooms and our schools. So I'm really pretty big on that right now, and I can't wait to see what we can do with it later.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to go check that out after our podcast tonight. It's realtimeboard.com, right?
Yes, sir.
So let me ask you this. Do you think that it could supplement staff meetings or replace in-person staff meetings?
Yeah, if used effectively, yes. Twitter already does that if it's used effectively, absolutely.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I'm a big fan of trying to do away with unnecessary meetings and cutting to the chase. Getting to the meat of the information that needs to be shared.
I want to do Google Hangouts and Link, but let's be careful there. I don't want to get away from that face-to-face because we can never do that. I know Einstein warned of that. I only want to look at it as, is it efficient? Can it speed some things up? And is it flexible? Some people got families. They got to run and do things with their families. They maybe can't look at something until 9:30 at night, whereas somebody else is single and they look at it during school and work all the time.
But I think that using something like real-time board or Twitter for staff meetings would also allow those who were either not able to be there or for some reason or another maybe checked out to go back and check the back channel of information that was shared, and then also process, digest that, and continue building on that after the meeting is actually over.
Yeah, excellent, yes.
Well, John, we're going to talk about technology today, and not just technology, but the effect that technology is having on teachers and students. I'm reading a book right now, is titled Rethinking Technology in the 21st Century. And it's really got me rethinking technology in the 21st century. And something that it's talking about is that buzzing you or me? That might be my microphones. My microphone. So rethinking technology in the 21st century, it takes the history of education and it breaks it down into seeds that were planted, for instance, the printing press, and then the Enlightenment, the American Revolution, and Industrial Revolution. And it talks about how there was a technological revolution with the creation of printed knowledge back then. But it also talks about us being in a new revolution that maybe should be or could be supplanting just the strict rigidity of classroom learning by itself. What do you see as the role of technology in learning right now, and perhaps where do you think it will go?
Ooh, very good question. First of all, I'd like to say the role of technology in education, I think, needs to be divided into two categories because they can be very different, teachers and students, because the purpose could be different sometimes for each of those two participants. But you know, we got to look at, is technology a tool or is it a toy? I know I say that very often, but it's as simple as that. And I have done this, and I have seen it done, where somebody introduces a gadget and the lesson for that day or that week is all surrounding the gadget instead of the objectives or the standards or, you know, whatever you need to be studying in that class. And so I know I need to caution myself with that. And I wrote down some notes here in trying to prepare, but I can just kind of speak about that. I mean, I want to make sure that I'm using technology to engage students, to generate that excitement, to offer freedom to, oh, I can post to the whole world instead of just my teacher. I can get feedback from somebody else outside my classroom. And, of course, I'm big on creativity. I always want to offer tools for creativity. But I do see that technology also hinders us. And, for example, I'm thinking of sometimes a simple thing to do is just discuss or just get up and maybe act something out. You don't have to spend time going through a gadget or learning that gadget and learning how to take notes into that when you're just kind of killing some type of time. So I think it's a delicate balance. Why do we use it? And is it making us more efficient? Is it moving us towards our ultimate goals, which are those standards and the creativity, and hopefully inspiring some student to be on fire for learning? Does that make kind of sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, and I actually have to I have to interrupt and say I got the title completely wrong. I've been focusing so much on the content. If you're taking notes, it's not Rethinking Technology in the 21st Century. It's Rethinking Education in the Age of Technology, and it is by Alan Collins, C-O-L-L-I-N-S. So I guess that gives you a little peek into my reading comprehension, but It's a fantastic book. I learned about it from a blog post on KurtReese.com. He is a principal that's on Twitter at KurtReese, and it's a fantastic read. Very short read, but it's a very in-depth read too. It looks at both the advocates and the opposing view of technology and learning. What do you think the effect of technology has had on the way that students think and learn?
Wow. Dave, won't you answer that one first and let me think about that? I have a feeling you've been thinking about that one, and I'm just now hearing it. Won't you give me a second on that?
All right. You know, you hear a lot about students not having as great of attention spans anymore. They're a little bit more distractible, and I don't know if that's the reality of using technology or perhaps screen time. But I think that it might be more about students' experience with technology and social media, wanting people to get to the point. They want to learn, or they want to get content right when they want it. They want to be able to get up and go use it rather than having someone draw on about it. And I think that perhaps we're starting to want our information condensed and delivered on time and in time.
Well, and I've seen and read a lot of research, you know, validating all the things you said, and I even saw one recently talking about just simply watching an ESPN Sports Center. If you notice all that is going on within that one screen, and it was trying to say something to the extent that that type of screen and you know, students watching that or people watching that, it's just making them think differently. I don't know. There's so much research out there validating both ways. The only thing I can arrive at definitively is this. When used appropriately, it is powerful, man. And I wanted to just to share maybe a couple of things to where I'm like, thank God for technology. How about taking two technology tools, not toys. Let's take a Dragon Dictation app on the smartphones.
That's one of your favorites.
Yes, it's one of my favorites. And, you know, we're on a field trip, and I asked the students to record their thoughts and emotions in real time as we're going through that field trip. Or maybe they're just doing it on the weekend. It's a weekend writing assignment. Well, you know, back in the day, they would have written that down on a sheet of paper, and they may have shared it with a teacher or a friend, and that's it. It's meaningless to them. But with Dragon Dictation, they could just click on that. They can use that app to speak into it and then ultimately just copy it down somewhere. And then they can take the Dragon Dictation app and merge it with Tripline app, and they can post where they are at the time that they were having those thoughts, or you know, wherever they were at that time. So you're taking those two apps and you're making a normal assignment that would be viewed by just a couple of people, you're making it viewable to the world in real time. And when I did that assignment or shared that with my students, I was telling them, look, life is writing right wherever you go. Experience life and be aware of how you're experiencing it. And so if you're at a museum, if you're just going out to hang out with your friends, stop and be cognizant of what you're thinking and experience in life in real time, in the present moment, and then just stop and talk about it. I didn't tell them right, talk about it, and then post where you are. And then the whole world can see that. I mean, that's just one assignment where I'm like, thank goodness for these two apps. That's powerful.
So does using this with Tripline, does that geo-tag your notes or the voice recording that you have, or does it leave it there so that other people that come across that place in the Tripline GPS can hear that?
All I can tell you is this. I feel like I don't know enough about what you were just talking about, to be quite honest with you. All I know is it was this simple. I checked in with the Tripline app where I was. It located me via GPS, and then I had copied and pasted what I had spoken into my phone from the Dragon Dictation app, and I just posted that when I checked in to whatever location. I'll be honest with you. I tried it out last summer when I went to the Georgia Aquarium, and each time my son and daughter and I would go to different areas, we went from everything from the subway to looking at different species in the aquarium, and we logged everything in, and I actually was really being nerdy, and of course my kids were rolling their eyes, but I was working on narrative writing, expository writing, descriptive writing, and I thought, you know, if this is standards-based, would this be valid? And absolutely it was.
Hey, I gotta give a shout-out to our listener. I got a tweet from him. It's Simon Miller at Vandalgrad. I shouted him out as my Twitter teacher to follow last week. He is an educator in the great state of Idaho, where I live. And I think I just shouted out his Twitter handle. It's at Vandal, V-A-N-D-A-L, grad, G-R-A-D. So, Simon, I'm looking back on our conversations. We've talked a lot over the last few days, and I think you're going to ISTE. Tweet me if you are. DM me a mailing address if you're not, and I'll get my book to you, and John will get that Studio 113 shirt to you as well. Thank you. This is for you, Simon. And actually, on the note of my friend Simon Miller, he he didn't send me a tweet, but I came across a tweet of his today that was for a conference happening in Seattle, Washington this March. I think it's the NCCE, which is a National Conference for Computer Educators, I believe. But I know that he and I are both going to submit proposals to that, and hopefully, fingers crossed, John, I can jump on your bandwagon and be a conference presenter come March.
Wow, I hope so, man. I want to quickly throw this out here. Simon just tweeted me also a couple of times, and this one here, he says, great points. It's different, not better or worse, or cause effect. Focus on how tech makes it better. Love that comment, Simon.
Yeah, I saw that too, and one thing that I want to use that as a springboard for is the role of the teacher as a result of technology. Now, we're very far from having one-to-one classrooms ubiquitously, but the role of the teacher changes as you start to use education, or as you start to use technology in the classroom or at home if you're a homeschool educator as well, where I think that the teacher becomes less of the storehouse of information and more of a facilitator. And one aspect of that that I think makes educators a little hesitant towards adopting or integrating technology is that there's a sense of pride in being the sage on the stage. And perhaps this technology revolution or the infusion of tech into the classroom is infringing on their sense of self or their sense of job responsibility. With that, I know that as I'm switching from the class, from a classroom teacher to a virtual teacher, I've kind of had to wrestle with, am I really still a teacher, or am I just a virtual help desk assistant? And I've come to the realization that teacher isn't just someone who stands in front of the classroom delivering lectures, showing PowerPoints, showing YouTube videos, and then giving you an assignment, but a teacher is someone who, in my mind, is helping you to get to the answers or the solutions to creative problems that you need.
Hey, Dave, totally agree with that. And I'm thinking right now as you're talking, I'm thinking if you were to call me a guide or facilitator, I am ecstatic. If a student ever said, oh, that John Hardison was one heck of a guide, he walked me through where I needed to go, then that's the greatest compliment I think you could give. I'm thinking also of my junior college baseball coach, Coach Joe Jordan, Southern Union State Community College, amazing coach, hardcore teacher, but what he would do is he would let you walk through what you were needing to learn to be a better baseball player at that time, and he would let you have your hard knocks, but he was right by your side every time, guiding you, putting challenges in front of you, not giving you the answer, not being the sage on the stage, not saying, look at me, let me show you how to do it, just guiding you through that. It was powerful. And in just 2 years of learning from that man, I still go back to that from when I was 19, 20 years old, and I use that as kind of a benchmark for what I want to do. I want to present challenges. I want to be right beside that student. I don't ever want them to say, where is that teacher at? Is he not with me? I'm right there. Sometimes behind them because I want them to lead. Sometimes maybe I step forward and lead, but always there guiding, facilitating, and presenting challenges.
You know, and Simon just sent a great tweet as well. It says, the effectiveness depends heavily on the teacher directing the learners. Teachers are more important. And I like the emphasis on directing the learners rather than forcing the learners or hurting the learners. It's directing the learners. The question is directing them to what or to where.
And with, and I would throw this in there real quickly. I was thinking of, you know, what you were talking about just a second ago, I guess it's kind of challenging teachers and how they see themselves. And I know it's a little unnerving sometimes to say, hey, here's my Symbaloo list of all these websites you can use. Go use whatever you need to get at this endpoint here to learn these standards. It's kind of unnerving because you're like, oh, goodness, I think I got to know every one of these apps or these websites. I let that go. I'm like, no, I don't. What I can do is I can be right there beside you as you learn it. And if you get there before I do with the technology tool, teach me, I've got the standards, and I can guide you to the standards.
Something that I love about that type of learning is when the teacher is discovering concepts or lessons right along with the learner, along with the student.
Doesn't that keep us alive, man?
It does, but I think it strengthens It strengthens the connection with the teacher and the student as well, to where they're both on this adventure together, and there's really no telling where you're going to end up, but you're going to end up there together, and there's going to be a great surprise at the end.
Classroom ownership. You know, I'm not above you talking down to you. You know, I'm here with you, and we are learning together. And let's get there, my friend. Let's get there.
I like that. I like that a lot, John. Moving on, of course, we could go on forever about this topic, but we're going to call it part one, to be continued. And before we wrap things up tonight, we're going to talk about Twitter users to follow. I'm going to throw out Simon again at Vandal Grad, but who are some? I have two other Twitter users to follow, but I'm going to have you go first with yours if you're ready.
Okay, I'm going with Tom Wandrum. He is a teacher in Hall County, Georgia, elementary teacher extraordinaire. He is Twitter at Tommy Tude, TommyTude, and he's going to be presenting at ISTE and bringing some of his kids to San Antonio. So this guy, I can sum him up in one word, and that's cool.
He is in my PLN, and I've had conversations with him before, seeing his profile picture. I can visualize that right now, and yes, cool is an understatement for Tommy Tude.
All right, who do you got, man?
I've got two.
Anybody else?
I've got two, yeah, and I am pulling up my notes right now on my phone to make sure that I get this first one's Twitter handle correct. But this first one, her name is Sarah, and her her Twitter handle is ICE Teacher Sarah. And she's someone who has been in my PLN for quite a while. She is an ISTE Emerging Leader for 2013. She's an elementary STEM teacher and coach. But she helped me to find stuff about Minecraft resources. I don't know if she plays it herself, but she had the people to connect me with who were able to help me out with that. But also, I was talking to her just a little bit before this podcast about her role in this hashtag. I don't know if it's new or not. I think it might be. I don't think it's too new, because there seems to be a lot of organization behind it. But it's Epic Yen, EPICYEN, and the Yen stands for Young Educators Network, and that's something that I'm excited to be a part of. They're going to be at ISTE 13, but I know they have a social event, I believe, Sunday night or Monday night, and I could be wrong about that. I've got a ticket to go to it, but it's to go and connect with young educators that are on Twitter. I'm 26 years old. I think that's my audience. I think you'd be welcome there, John, but I don't know if you fit the criteria. But right, but actually, right. Actually, I think you could get a senior citizens discount. The second person I want to shout out is someone I look up to a lot on Twitter. He was one who helped me develop my PLN from the very beginning, and his name is Kyle Pace. It's at Kyle, K-Y-L-E, Pace, P-A-C-E. Are you familiar with him, John?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
He's a big dog, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, he is an instructional technology specialist in Kansas City, and I was fortunate enough to be able to view his interview on the Techlandia podcast on their website. But he's someone who seems to me to always be pushing the limits to see what technology can do for his district. He's someone who has every right to have an ego about his credentials as an ed tech enthusiast on Twitter, but who absolutely is down to earth and very approachable, it seemed online. I'm going to go up to him at ISTE and see if that's the case, which I imagine it is. But early on, I've been on Twitter for about a year now, and I remember getting mentioned in one of his tweets that linked to one of his blog posts. It was Connecting the Dots was the title of his blog post. And he was basically giving thanks to the things that his PLN had done for him, and then shouted out some great educators to follow on Twitter. And I was one of them, which totally blew me away, because I don't feel like I am a must-follow on Twitter. I have a great time there, but for someone like him to have shouted a newbie out like me was very, very humbling, and very well received. So follow those two for sure, and give yours a shout out again. It was Tommy Tude, right?
Yeah, and I wanted to say one more thing because I feel like I need to say just a little bit more after your great descriptions of your characters. But Tommy Tude, the greatest thing probably about him, man, is he is getting these elementary kids to do some amazing things with technology as they're trying to reach their standards that I could foresee a lot of high school students struggling with. So how he gets them to do that, I don't know. But he has the firm grasp on when it's a tool, when it's a toy. And I was just very excited to talk to him.
Hey, John, did you see the news about the Los Angeles Unified School District yesterday?
I don't think I caught that.
The Los Angeles Unified School District, second largest school district in the United States, just approved $30 million to equip all of their students with iPads.
Wow.
Second largest district in the United States is funding iPads for, I think they have 47 campuses, and that broke on Twitter yesterday and created quite a conversation. I'd actually heard someone say it was Tedros Sisi on Twitter say that that really puts Los Angeles in the forefront as a leader in implementing technology in the classroom. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I just would be happy for all of our students to have some iPads. What about you?
I'd be happy for any of my students to have an iPad or for there to be enough Wi-Fi in the school building to enable that. But here, John, I was curious. They're the second largest school district in the United States, and to close out this show, I'm going to give you a quiz. And the quiz is multiple questions. Then they build off of each other. The first one, John, what?
Hold on, Dad. Why don't you prep me on any of this?
Because I was just looking this up as we were about to get started. So, if Los Angeles Unified School District is the second largest school district in the United States, what city do you think has the number one largest school district?
I would say New York.
Yep, New York City. The Los Angeles School District has about 700,000 students, and New York City, according to Wikipedia, has over 1 million. Now, John,
wow.
What I want to see if you can do, New York is one, California is two. Can you name the three states that fill in the rest of the top five for largest school districts? The fifth one surprised me. You don't have to get them in order, but what states do you think have the largest, states or cities, have the third, fourth, and fifth largest school districts in the United States?
How about Texas?
No. They're number
Pennsylvania?
Six.
Pennsylvania?
Houston's number six. Pennsylvania is, let's see, ninth.
Wow. I don't know. I don't know. I can't think of another one that I would, I mean, I gave you my two best right there.
I give you a clue. Number three is the former home of Rahm Emanuel.
Illinois.
Yep, Chicago Public Schools. Number four, Miami-Dade County Public Schools in Florida. Number five, Nevada, Clark County School District. Ooh. That one blew me away. 303,000 students there. And I was excited to see the two school districts that I grew up in Salt Lake City made the top 100, Jordan School District and Granite School District. And I was looking, I kept going down, and I was looking for Georgia everywhere. And Georgia squeaked in with three school districts. What's your school district, John?
Fall County.
What county?
Hall, H-A-L-L.
Hall County, let's see here. The largest one in, can you name the largest one in your home state?
Fulton, Cobb, Gwinnett.
Yeah, Fulton's the largest, has 84,000 about. Then let's see, going down the list, you squeaked in two more in the top 100, and going way down here, smaller than the two Utah ones that I had. Clayton County has 52,500. And Atlanta Public Schools has 50,000. It seems like there was one more. Maybe that was it, though. That was it. You didn't make it. Does that surprise you?
I don't know. I guess not. I really haven't given much thought to it.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know if Wikipedia knows that Idaho has any school districts, but we didn't make it in there.
Well, I can tell you this. We have a forward-thinking school district, and I am proud to say I'm in Hall County. I can tell you that.
That's fantastic. And I'll give my school district a shout-out, too. We're Bonneville Joint School District, number 93. Fantastic place to work. I'm going to ISTE with our EdTech specialist, my new principal, and one other blended learning instructor as well. And John, it is going to be farewell until I meet up with you in San Antonio, but we're going to do an EdTrends podcast from there, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I got to tell you this, though, man. Every time I see a picture or you change your Twitter profile or when I see you on Google Hangouts like right now, you're like a master of disguises, man. It's beard one day, goatee one day, hairdo different the next. I mean, but I recognize you at ISTE.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm going to be wearing this charcoal gray V-neck. But you're right, I did get a haircut. My wife's a cosmetologist, so I don't have to pay for this stuff. I had shaved my beard and absolutely regretted it from the first moment I saw myself. So I'm growing this nice, well-kempt beard out. But I think I'm going to keep this look for a while. And I already know I'm going to put up a new Twitter profile pic by the end of ISTE. So don't get comfortable with the one that's on there now.
Well, I'm going to throw on a toupee and see if you can recognize me, okay?
All right. I think your accent's going to give it away, though. It's an unmistakable voice.
All right,
John. All right, I will see you in San Antonio. Tune in next week, Wednesday. We will have it up. We might record on Tuesday. I don't know if we talked about that, but we will tweet it out. EdTrends Podcast. Download us on iTunes. We have two viewers. Whoever that second viewer is, give us a tweet. At Dave Guymon, at John Hardison 1. And we would love to give you a shout out as well, John. As they say in the Lone Star State, adios.
All right, man. See ya.